Welcome to my podcast series that speaks about all things happening in the world relating to disability and the world of work. For those of you who are new to my podcasts, I generally try and bring some real and relatable approaches to my topics, typically combining stories of my lived experiences as a person with a disability to my professional experience as a transformation leader and disability confident business consultant. My name is Lisa Bradshaw. I'm a social entrepreneur. I'm an advocate, a public speaker, and most definitely a disruptor, and a consultant on all things relating to disability confidence in our economy. Aside from my formal credentials, which you can find on my LinkedIn page, I'm also a wheelchair user, and thank goodness for that. Now, why thank goodness, you may ask? Well, given my career as a strategic consultant on building a disability confident and accessible economy, it really helps when people believe that I actually have a disability, particularly when you use lived experiences to illustrate the impact of barriers and accessibility and general inclusion in business. In fact, I actually get away with being quite direct, quite humorous in my stories because people recognize that I have authority to speak. They see my disability as real. My wheelchair makes it obvious. My physical weakness is apparent to other people, and my reliance on help from others to get things done is noticeable. So I'm seldom asked to prove my disability before being given access to enabling options. But what if my disability was not obvious? Either because it was not visible immediately on the outside, or because I was not physically present before you, in front of you. Why is it that evidence of disability is required before being treated equitably? Why is it that proof of disability is required before giving people in our economy access to enablers that, quite frankly, would benefit people with and without disabilities at some point or other? Why is it that medical verification of disability is so often legally required before you as an individual who lives the disabling experience is actually believed? Now, by this stage, I imagine you are already thinking, well, listen, it's because we have targeted programs that are reserved for people with a disability, so we want to hold these opportunities for them. Or perhaps you're thinking, it's because we have to track our demographics to ensure that we are progressing towards set quotas and representative demographic targets. Now, both are justified reasons on the face of it. But do we not also have similar targets for programs and demographic targets for race and gender? And yet different rules seem to apply in common practice as ableism creeps in from the unconscious bias realm. Now, what do I mean by this? Consider this scenario. Imagine you are applying for a skills program that is targeting women in leadership. You put in your application and the recruiter replies saying, "Thank you so much for your application. Please send medical proof of gender, which must include estrogen level counts that must be higher than 50% in order for us to recognize you as a woman and to qualify you as suitable for this program. Can you also please send an occupational health certificate proving your capability at work?" Well, that would be ridiculous, right? You'd never dream of asking a woman to do that because you would take it as face value and respect the person's self-identity. People would be horrified. HR would hopefully have a bit of a meltdown. Now, what about if we take that same principle and let's apply it to race? I'm from South Africa, and very often we have a broad-based demographic description of black people, which are addressing apartheid and its impact on exclusion. So what if we took a skills program for black people, or whatever term you use to describe your racial demographics in your country, where the recruiter replied saying, "Thank you for your application. Please send medical proof of melatonin levels that must be more than 50% to be considered black, and an occupational health certificate proving your capability at work." Again, would you be horrified? Would you question who on earth sets the melatonin or estrogen level benchmarks that qualify you as a woman or as black? So hopefully you're a little bit like appalled by that comment. And yet, why is it somehow acceptable to put people with a disability through endless hoops, letters, specialist reviews, paperwork, and benchmarks against some quantitative measure just to be believed and recognized as a person with a disability, just to access that opportunity to participate equitably, or just to get that tiniest adjustment that would actually help them do their jobs better? Can you start to see how the ableist double standard creeps in? Who decides what that quantitative benchmark is on a human experience? Like how disabling depression is, or how a learning disability can be particularly disabling to that particular individual in that particular community or education system? Is it not the impact of obstacles that cause this disabling factor? Is it not important to focus on how to remove those obstacles for that particular person to thrive that actually counts? And isn't this the same conversation that we should be having with every employee? In other words, instead of going, prove you have a disability so that we can treat you fairly, is it not better to say, what barrier, enablers, or support would help you thrive in this position? Another thing to consider is who allows this personally degrading practice of having to jump through legally mandated proof hoops, this invasive scrutiny of your personal experiences, and some judgment as to whether you are suffering enough to be worthy of the hassle of fair treatment. Would it not be better rather to focus that legal effort on standardizing accessibility for all in common practice, rather than only in special cases where you deem it justified? So these are all things we need to consider. If you have a look at it on the face of it, we spend so much time worrying about the disability, we lose sight of the ability. We spend so much time asking people to prove a qualitative experience in a quantitative form that we lose sight of actually understanding the barriers itself and how we can remove those as common practice. Now, this is all very hypothetical, and so hopefully we start to see the world as going, we really need to do something to change this. But alas, we live in this current reality where quotas and demand for proof before justice prevail. So as employers, as people in organizations, as potential employees, how do we balance today's ableistic reality with a drive towards creating different realities where ability, barrier prevention, and accessible and equitable opportunities for all becomes the practice that is judged rather than the individual? So here are some practical tips to consider. The first step is start to reposition the narrative on the disability disclosure conversation. So basically, you want people to feel safe to come and say, I have a disability, these are the disabling barriers, these are the enabling steps, and let's put those into common practice so that everybody can thrive. So instead of asking people to confess you've got a disability and give us evidence, and then we will judge you whether you are deemed worthy to be treated fairly, flip the narrative. Start saying, we're on a journey to becoming more disability confident so that everybody in our organization and everybody that we serve can thrive. Your insights are valuable in helping us get this done. Let's do it together. Step 2, respond consistently regardless of proof. So let's say you come along and someone says to you, listen, I do have ADHD. And you go, well, you know, every second child at school has ADHD. It's the new social norm. So unfortunately, it's not a disability. Rather start by going, okay, thanks for sharing that with me. Tell us how it affects you. What can we do in order to support you? What are some of the disabling experiences that you are experiencing right now that we can make sure we can minimize so that you are enabled to thrive? And the person goes, well, I don't want to formally disclose, or I'm not considered disabled enough in my ADHD to give you the paperwork. You go, well, that's absolutely fine. We want everybody in our business to thrive. So please just share. Tell us what we can do better. Tell us what we can do to support you. So the experience of that enabling journey must be the same with everybody, regardless of whether or not you are formally or legally recognized as a person with a disability. And really, that's no different than an employee coming to you and saying, listen, I'm dealing with massively large data files and my laptop is just not capacitated or equipped to manage it. Can you give me a better laptop? So remember, the outcome of this conversation is improved performance and a more motivated and committed employee. So it's about going, well, how does it disable you? And if I can put these enabling steps in place, This should bring you to the point where your performance will enable you to thrive. So it comes down to not special treatment, but equitable treatment. It comes down to removing a disabling barrier so that you can perform better. And by no means does it equate to you don't need to do the job that we've hired you for. It's how you do the job that makes sure that it suits the individual and is tailor-made to allowing them to achieve those performance objectives to the highest possible standard. Step three is to try and simplify the process where formal disclosure is the selected route. Now, again, living in the real world that we're in, many employers are actually obliged to report a disability to some external body, like your labor department or to the municipalities, in order to unlock finance or adjustments to enabling steps. So sometimes a formal disclosure is, in our current reality, required in order to remove the barrier. Now, my advice would be to simplify this as much as possible. So it's about saying, what proof of disability is required in this particular stakeholder? And what can we do to help you navigate that process? It could be as simple as getting somebody from your employee resource group committee who's already been through the process that can just sit and help you navigate the paperwork and guide you on how to do this without it being too complicated. So the end goal, however your formal disclosure process has to play out in your context, your business, your environment, try and simplify it for that person as much as possible. Keep it focused on proof of disability, not sharing of unrelated personal information. Make sure that that guidance, that respect, that dignity is kept front and center of every conversation that you have. And basically try and make this a much more easy and positive experience for that person that may not be so thrilled about having to prove and confess a disability before being treated fairly. Step four, measure impact through lived experience and position these learnings as common practice. So what do I mean by that? Well, we do live in our current reality. So there might be a situation where somebody has disclosed a disability, you've had the conversation, and you can't remove the barrier. Let's just say you don't have budgets to adjust a building, or there's a safety law that you can't contravene, or there's some reason why you don't have the power or the authority to make the required adjustment. That is the reality. It doesn't mean that we accept that as a status quo. So there it's about saying, look, we couldn't make this adjustment for you now. And unfortunately, you know, we can explore other ways of trying to enable you, but that particular adjustment's not realistic. But we're going to go back to the drawing board. We're going to put budget in over the next 2 years to have that removed. We're going to question the policy that's in place that is the disabling barrier. So it's about taking those learnings, positive or negative, and then doing something about that. If somebody's had a really positive experience in that feedback loop and they go, gosh, that was just so positive, I felt so respected, and the outcome is I'm able to do my job better, which is great, then again, turn that into common practice. So you can ask questions like, well, where did we do well? How can we take that and apply that to common practice? Do you have any suggestions that might help other people who are experiencing what you went through? How do we get these conversations out there and this knowledge out there to the people that can make this more common practice? So it's really important about respecting the reality of where we are, keeping our eye on the prize or the goal of where we should be, and keeping those feedback loops real and honest in helping us get from A to B. So with all that in mind, it's past time that we stopped making it so hard for people just simply to be people. We want people to thrive. Yet in order to do that, we need to create a safe culture where all people can communicate what they need in order to thrive and have a safe space to do this with gusto, without fear, without shame, you know, without thinking that we're asking for a favor, but rather we're asking to have a conversation that's going to benefit everybody. We need our leadership to be capacitated on how to navigate these conversations and respond with positive actions and behaviors that will result in a transformation in our company structures that don't support this positive outcome. So in essence, having company structures that enable our leaders to deliver positive outcome is a really great, respectful way of saying you don't need to prove you've got a disability in order to be treated fairly. You need to tell us what's disabling you. And as an organization, we've got structures and support elements in place to make sure that everybody is enabled equitably to thrive. We need advocates, and we need people who are traveling the journey to have communication channels that provide real-time feedback loops. This keeps common practice honest and on track. I've met quite a few organizations that were really leading the game when it came to accessible and inclusive recruitment strategies for all. And then along came AI, and we started to do first and second round of recruitment through AI systems and AI platforms. And once again, we've stopped asking the question, is this going to disable people? Have we honestly checked the experience of our AI recruitment processes with people who have disabilities? So again, remember, in every advance or every development or every evolution of a business practice, if we don't have those communication and feedback channels from people with lived experience, we are at risk of once again building barriers into common practice. We need accountability structures that change broken systems organically and consistently, from education systems to infrastructure to laws and policies that separate disability as if it was something other. So if that's your game, if that's your area of influence, if you are in government, if you are in education, if you are in transport, whatever you are in, have a look at common practice and go, is it separating disability as something other? Or is it considering accessibility and inclusion of disability as common practice? I certainly recognize and respect the position that many organizations and employers are in. As a business owner, I have budgets. I have bottom line targets. I've got accountabilities to the people in my team to make sure that we live in a reality and we do business so that profits can be realized. So I really do get the perspective of business going, this is not my core business, but I've got all of these compliance and equity and human rights demands, and I don't know how to balance it with our current realities. How do we put these realities into place and meet these accountability structures, but doing it in a sustainable way that's good for my business? I also think, from somebody who is a wheelchair user with lived experience of disability, and knowing the people that I know with disabilities out there that are really changing the world and adding huge value to business, I also understand the power of recognizing ableism, being able to put structures in place that enable everybody rather than having to ask for special favors, and be respected as a fierce and competitive stakeholder in the economy rather than somebody that human rights needs to protect. So start the conversation from the very beginning. It doesn't matter whether your disability confidence is right back at the beginning or whether you are an ally and a fellow advocate and game changer and disruptor. It all just starts with a great conversation. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free just to get hold of me at Lisa, that's L-E-S-A, at bradshawlarue.co.za. If you'd like more specific information about my business, what I do, the consulting that I offer, again, you're welcome to visit me at lisabradshawinternational.com or at bradshawlarue.co.za. Well, that's my message for today. I hope it's been valuable. Look out for more podcasts to follow. And again, pop me an email, connect with me via LinkedIn. I look forward to traveling the journey towards disability confidence with you.